Hello and welcome to everybody. This is the Den Meeting Open House Call. And I'm Carol Tice from the Freelance Writers Den, and I'm here with one of my favorite co-hosts, Linda Formicelli from The Renegade Writer. Linda and I are just wrapping up a session of doing the blast-off class, which we'll tell you a bit more about at the end of the call. And we felt like there was kind of one missing piece that we don't get to spend as much time on as we'd like, and that's how to develop great story ideas. And there's just kind of a fact of life as a freelance writer that you really want to have a lot of story ideas up your sleeve, a lot of really great story ideas. Editors really like writers that they can count on to turn to with many story ideas. And you know, if they have a hole that you're the kind of person they can call and say, you know, I really need something about taxes or meditation or whatever it is, and they just know you'll have something. So developing a lot of story ideas is really important to your freelance writing success. And we are going to talk a lot about the two of our process of developing and pitching story ideas and sort of what goes into a successful query. And Linda is going to kick this off by talking a little bit about what makes a good story idea. We're going to riff for a little tiny bit, and then we are going to get to the mountain of questions we have gotten both in the den and on the registration forms. So go ahead, Linda.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, so, you know, ideas are a huge sticking point, especially for new writers, because, you know, you're motivated, you're raring to go, you want a query, but the first thing you need is a good idea. And a lot of writers don't really know what constitutes a good idea in terms of what editors are looking for. So I have five characteristics that make a saleable idea. And the first one is that ideas need to be focused. And I teach a query letter e-course, and in the first lesson we talk about generating ideas. And the assignment is to come up with three ideas. And a lot of times the ideas are too broad. I'll get something like the bride's top 10 problems solved or wine tasting in New York, and those are just way too huge to fit into many magazines. For example, with the bride's top 10 problems solved, what kinds of bridal problems will you solve? Money problems, sex problems, in-law problems? And as for wine tasting in New York, what makes it special? Is there a wonderful wine tasting area that's often overlooked? Do the wineries specialize in a certain variety of wine? Is there a winery owner who's doing something really different? You need to try to get as narrow as you can with your idea. There is no new topic idea under the sun, so you need to find a fresh, unique slant on a topic that has already been done to death. I mean, wineries in New York, done. Bride's problems, done. But the little slant that narrows it down might not have been done, or at least not quite so much. But then another characteristic is, well, let me preface this by saying there's such a thing as being too narrow. So you want your idea to be broad enough that it appeals to a majority of the magazine's reader. If your idea appeals only to a tiny slice of the magazine's readership, or if there are only one or two markets in the entire industry you could sell it to, your idea might be too narrow. One way to broaden a narrow idea is to offer a roundup. For example, if you had an idea, say, you know, in your little town there's a local gourmet hot dog stand that puts caviar on hot dogs or something. That is too narrow if you're trying to target national or larger magazines. But if you do a roundup of five or six places around the country that are offering highbrow takes on lowbrow food, then you have more of a chance. And now it's just broad enough. The third characteristic is that ideas need to be timely. An editor will ask, why now? Why are you pitching this to me now? Why is it important to my readers now? And you want to be able to answer that question in your query. Examples of good hooks that make an idea timely include the fact that the topic's been in the news, an anniversary, a new book about the topic, or, say, a holiday. For holidays, you can look online. There are a lot of holiday calendars, and they include all those little holidays like Back Up Your Computer Month and Save Your Smile Week, as well as some of the big ones like National Cancer Month and Heart Health Month. So things like that are really good ideas to peg your ideas to. And to get a jump on new books, if you want to use that as a peg, you can search on your keywords in Amazon.com, but use the drop-down menu to sort by date instead of by relevance. And then the first results that come up will usually be books that haven't been published yet. And you can use those as your news hook and even interview the author for your pitch. So say you want to write an article on, you know, something to do with weight loss, and you put weight loss in there and you sort by relevance and you see there's a book coming out in 6 to 8 months, that is perfect because you could, if you pitched it then, you could time the publication of the article with the book coming out, and that makes a news hook that makes your idea timely. And do keep in mind when I'm talking about timely ideas that most magazines work maybe 3 to 6 months ahead of time. So, you know, right now we're probably looking at, you know, early spring sometime. So keep that in mind when you're looking for timely ideas. The fourth characteristic of a good idea is that it needs to be surprising. Editors love ideas that are counterintuitive. Recently I had a post on the Renegade Writer blog about how to come up with surprising ideas, and my tip was to actually put the word surprising in the title. And you don't have to leave it there, it's just for you, so that as you work on your pitch, you'll be reminded that the idea and the content of your query need to be something people haven't seen before. So if you're thinking of, you know, 5 ways to save time, which is kind of stale and also too broad, it becomes 5 surprising ways to save time. Then your job is to research those counterintuitive tips. For example, one of the tips might be exercising doesn't use time. It makes time because you get so much energy, you get so much energy and motivation from it that you can get more done in the time you have left after exercise than if you hadn't spent the time working out at all. That's the kind of idea I'm talking about. Another type of surprising and sort of counterintuitive idea is what I call an opposite idea. And this is where you take something that's been done to death and you kind of flip it on its head and you present a new, fresh take on it. For example, years ago, like, you know, 8 or 9 years ago, there was a big brouhaha over peanuts on airplanes, and peanuts were being banned everywhere because of peanut allergies, and I pitched an idea to Oxygen called In Defense of the Peanut about why peanuts are good and all the health benefits of the peanut, and that was kind of an opposite idea that opposed everything else that was going on in the media about peanuts. So that is another example of a surprising idea. And the final characteristic is that ideas need to be marketable. Now, as I mentioned, I teach the e-course on breaking into magazines, and people have to come up with ideas for the first assignment. And I always get 2 things. I always get a grandmother who wants to write stories about grandparenting, and I always get a mom who wants to write stories about raising teens. And these are great ideas, and they have wonderful credentials. But the problem is there are hardly any magazines out there that target grandparents, at least ones that pay well. Even AARP, people say, well, I can pitch AARP. As far as I know, they don't really run grandparenting topics. And there are hardly any magazines out there that target parents of teens. Almost all of the parenting magazines target parents of babies, toddlers, preschoolers, and young school children, and they might go up to age 11. Family Circle is the only magazine I know of that targets parents of tweens and teens. So if you're coming up with an idea, you need to make sure, as you're thinking about it, are there markets for this idea? Is it scalable? Or am I going to write up an entire pitch and then there's only one place to send it to, and if they don't take it, I'm stuck with this query I spent all this time on. So an idea does need to be marketable. Carol, do you have any comments on that?
I don't know. I thought that was a pretty great summary of all the ways. I think, you know, this was a question we got on the registration too, sort of which comes first, the market or the idea. Mm-hmm. And I guess I think the ideas usually come first, mostly because I just kind of cannot stop them from entering my brain. I just get them all the time. And then I start thinking about, you know, who they might be for. And definitely if while you're thinking about who it might be for, you realize there aren't a lot of good places it would be for, you know, that's a problem. Maybe I don't want to prioritize that idea, you know, so high on my list. Anyway, so I was going to pick this up and talk about how you find good ideas. And I know one of Linda's favorite ways is just from your own life. And I don't use that super much, but I actually did just use it for a blog post I did for Entrepreneur because I was sent a very strange phishing, spammy-looking email from Comcast. And my husband actually researched it because we just thought it looked so bogus, and it was really from them. And I just thought it was a disaster in marketing emails, so I wrote how not to send marketing emails, a lesson from Comcast. I think that's going next week, and I'm expecting that to be a very highly read post. So, and it points up another theme, which is fails. People love to read about disasters, about how people or businesses screwed things up. That's just always a popular topic. I find ideas by reading other publications a lot. Often I'll read something and I'll find myself feeling like there's an unanswered question, or like I want to know what will happen next in this trend or this piece of news, and it doesn't really answer that. And this is how you get to that issue of, how do you write about a timely topic without it going out of date before it could get published, is when you see a piece of news, you think about what will happen next. And anytime there's a big piece of news, many, many, many things are going to follow from that piece of news. So like the economy goes down or the price of real estate goes down, that just has 100 ripple effects on people whose houses are being foreclosed, or people are trying to get their mortgages modified, people are trying to refinance, people who need to relocate cross-country for their job right now. So it spins out many, many possible ideas. And sometimes one of my favorite sort of easy ways to come up with a story idea is to, if I'm reading a national publication, I think about how the story could be localized. And if I'm reading a local or regional publication, I think about how the story could be nationalized. So if I'm reading a local story that millionaires are trying to sell their homes for sale by owner here in Seattle, I might do some research, and I would assume we're not the only market that's happening, and it's a general economic thing. And maybe I could sell that to, USA Today or something, or Forbes or Portfolio as a national story. Or if I saw it as a national story and it hadn't been done in Seattle, vice versa, I could look at it in my market and pitch it to the Seattle Times real estate section. So that's one of my favorites, that and asking what's the missing piece, what happens next. Getting out of your seat and going into your town and walking around and talking to people, it's almost impossible to not get story ideas. I actually once was at a retreat when I was a staff writer, and we were asked to get up and leave the retreat for 1 hour and come back with a story. And, go walk around downtown Seattle and find something interesting. And I found something I ended up writing for the paper. It really, news is just everywhere you look. Just if you open your eyes, start walking around, you're like, ooh, look at all the empty stores. Who's going to come fill them? Maybe there's an interesting story to do about the new retailers that are coming. Like the Times just did one about JCPenney returning to downtown Seattle after, 80 years or something. So I think those are some of my strategies. Linda, do you want to add any?
Yeah, actually, I love your ideas too. And the one I usually use to come up with article ideas, because I write mostly service pieces, which are articles that have some sort of take-home value to the reader. They're kind of how-to articles, so a lot of diet, health, stuff like that. And what I do is I think about a problem that I have that's been bothering me, it's been on my mind, and likely other people are having that same problem. And, if you find out or you intuit that this is something that's happening to a lot of people, it could be a good article idea that you could pitch to a service magazine with the solutions. And
right,
that's something that works for, the women's magazines, the health magazines, all of them.
So one thing I was going to say, I don't do this anymore because people send me press releases because of my role at Entrepreneur, but you could go on like PR Web or Business Wire and just look at press releases, put in some keywords on topics you're interested in, and see what news companies are putting out, what new study data they're releasing, who's expanding, who's declaring bankruptcy, what new products are being introduced. There's just so much, a lot of what you'll see is junk, but if you skim and scam on your topic, you might see three releases that are kind of all about the same thing, and you start to think, everyone is putting out a new, app that helps you lose weight. Maybe a fun roundup of those and how they work would be something. You can just sort of troll the newsosphere and see what news is being put out there, and often find a lot of ideas.
Yeah, and there's another site that's similar to these, but it focuses specifically on science, and I think it has science and medicine and technology, and it's Eureka Alert. So it's like Eureka and Alert put together, EurekaAlert.com or .org. I think it's both. And that's a really good place if you do health articles or lifestyle articles to come up with ideas.
I don't know if I want to share this one, but I will anyway. I'm actually scanning through a post I did for Copyblogger called 50 Can't Fail Techniques for Finding Great Blog Topics. And one of the things I've gotten a decent number of stories ideas from is eavesdropping. I'm a ferry commuter, and when you're sitting around on the ferry for a half hour waiting for your boat to get in, a lot of times just groups of people are gabbing all around you, and I'll hear interesting things going on that way.
That's a great tip.
Yeah, just listen to what people are talking about when you're at a party, when you're at a playgroup. What's on people's minds? What's the new hot thing? What's bothering them? Pain points are really great. What are people's problems? And that gets back to the service journalism and how to, what article could you write about how to solve a problem people are having? So, Linda, you were going to present a couple of ideas that you've come up with. And
I've had a couple of stories that have done really well. So I wanted to talk about how I came up with those ideas. One of these is a story I ended up placing with Redbook in like 1999. I was researching women's magazines because I really wanted to break into some new ones. And I had been writing for Family Circle and Woman's Day. And I was looking through all the magazines and just kind of getting a feel for them. And I was looking at the covers. And I was looking at the covers of, like, Redbook and Cosmo and those type of things, and I noticed on every cover they had either the word orgasm or the word diet. And all of a sudden it just clicked, and I thought, why not do one on the orgasm diet? And it could be on foods that boost the libido. So I pitched this to Redbook, and they bought it. And my original idea, though, and so this is how an idea can change or how, you can find out that an idea would have been better a different way. My original idea was to talk about the nutrients you needed and how they work, and then give examples of foods with those nutrients. So, for example, I might have a subhead about zinc and, why zinc boosts the libido, and then I would suggest that readers eat oysters, which are high in zinc. And this is the way I pitched it, but the way it ended up that my editor wanted was for me to play up the food and then talk about why you need it. So, for example, the headline would be about oysters, and then I talk about, because oysters have zinc and zinc does this. And in hindsight, this would have been a much better way of structuring the query. It's much more concise. Readers would rather know, eat this food. This is something easy I can do, is go out and eat this food, instead of saying, hey, get this nutrient, and now I have to figure out where it is. So I should have pitched it that way. But the moral of the story here is study the markets you want to break into, read widely, and then play with ideas. Just play, and something will click. Do you have any comments on that, or should I go to the next one?
Yeah, no, I dig reading headlines of things, too, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and what's really great about that is it did end up on the cover because it basically had all the words they have on their cover every month. It was called the Better Orgasm Diet, and it was right on the cover, so... another one is this past spring, I had a reported essay in Women's Health called Worried Sick about how easy it is to go overboard worrying about toxins and dust and dirt and so on, especially when you have a young child, as I do. And I came up with the idea when I was reading in Prevention magazine about how you shouldn't have a Wi-Fi modem in your bedroom because it emits cancer-causing electromagnetic frequency. And I just started crying because we had one in our baby's room, which used to be our office. And I wasn't crying so much because I thought my baby was going to get a brain tumor from the Wi-Fi, but because it just hit me. It was just the straw that broke the camel's back. I realized I could not possibly keep up with all the warnings that we're getting from health experts as much as I tried. So this is what's called, we talked about this before, the opposite idea, where you take a well-worn idea, like why you should avoid toxins, which is in every single magazine, and you flip it on its head and talk about why it can be worse to worry yourself to death over toxins and why you need to lighten up. And again, this is a great way to get more mileage out of your old ideas. I originally wrote up the idea as an essay. I was just so fired up that I wrote it out. And it didn't really have any oomph. I'm just not an essay writer. So then I decided to turn it into a reported essay, which is like an essay. It has the first person in there, but it also includes expert advice that readers can use. So it's kind of a service piece mixed with an essay. And I used the original essay as the base of the query. And I started off with an anecdote that played up how insane I was going over the whole toxin issue in our home. My original title was, Do Plastic Bubbles Have BPA?, which was a play on the fact that experts are saying you shouldn't drink plastic out of water bottles because they contain BPA, which I think is a hormone disruptor. And the editor changed the title to the much better, Worried Sick. So that's something that, yeah, don't get too attached to your titles. But this is another thing about reading widely and synthesizing what you see in different magazines to come up with a new idea, because this, you know, I've been reading all about toxins and detox this and detox that, and then I finally read that thing in prevention, and I was like, that's it. I have to write something that's the opposite of this. So again, just read the markets that you want to write for. Carol?
Yeah, right on. Well, I wanted to talk about one story idea that I just recently occurred to me that I'm getting ready to pitch, and I know no one can steal it from me because it's just, it's something only I can write, because only I am a freelance writer who has been to belt sander drag racing in Point Roberts, Washington, so I'm not really worried about it. I have a thing for funny races like that, and if you have never seen belt sanders raced competitively, I can tell you, you are really missing one of life's great joys. And it came to my mind because, of course, shortly, the zucchini races will be coming up on the island where I live. And if you have not seen zucchinis raced competitively, you should also really be checking that out. And I realized that I do have this sort of attraction to silly races like this, and that I know so many kinds of them that I could do a roundup, like for my AAA magazine here locally, or maybe Seattle magazine. And then, you know, I could do some research and maybe nationalize that story and do it for, like, Family Fun or something for a summer issue of sort of crazy races that you can go watch. I mean, these races are all, you know, really about laughing. We have milk box, what are those called? Milk carton
milk
derby,
cream?
where they race, you race watercraft made from milk cartons across a lake here in Seattle.
Awesome.
That's a summer thing. And then there's a kinetic sculpture race where it's like art that you race in. And oh, an outhouse race. Thank you, Fiona. Yeah, exactly. A bed race. Yeah, I mean, I have a thing for this, so I think I should totally develop some story ideas.
That's cool.
On
oh,
it.
My God. Carol, I have to add one for you. In Maine, Eric wrote about this, I think, for Yankee. It's the International Wife Carrying Competition. And there's something called the Norwegian carry, where the guy has the woman kind of like upside down, like a sack of potatoes, and it's very weird. And people, these men basically carry their wives, and they race.
That is hilarious.
You need it.
But, you know, I think we're really hitting something. It's like, what gives you joy in life? What's
mm-hmm.
fun? What's shocking? What's surprising? What's crazy? Well, you know, your sensibility that you bring to it is what allows you to create those story ideas that no one else is going to pitch your editor. You know, it's really almost about kind of being yourself. So I don't know if anyone has any story ideas that they brought that they want to put in comments and get feedback on, but while you're thinking about all that, I want to get to the questions we had in Freelance Writer's Den on the forums, because we always start with those. And Janita was saying that she struggles with reshaping ideas to that particular unique angle. And her example was the topic of parents who play favorites with their kids. What can you do to it to make it unique? You know, turn it into a quiz and make it, you know, 10 questions to ask to see if you play favorites. Is that enough? You know, what do you say, Peggy? This is Linda, this is sort of in your bailiwick, I think.
Yeah. And Janina, I think that was perfect what you said about coming up with like a quiz or a chart or something. I mean, sometimes you take an idea and you just repackage it. And we talked about packaging in Blastoff, I believe, where there are quizzes and there are charts and there are special graphical treatments and there are clever subheads. Because you'll probably notice that if you're looking at Parenting Magazine, that idea is done on a regular basis because, you know, new parents are always coming in and, you know, they're having kids, they're reading the magazine, and then they're moving out of that demographic and leaving. So they're always running the same ideas over and over again because their audience is always changing. So you can do the idea again, but if you package it differently so at least, you know, it does seem fresher, that could be that is a really good idea.
Huh, the sound is breaking up. I hope it's getting better now. I got a note from Terry. Hope it's okay now. I don't know. Linda sounds fine to me. I sound fine to me, but that doesn't mean anything. You know, I have written the same story idea sometimes over and over. I mean, the thing I wanted to say about this repurposing of ideas is that sometimes you almost don't have to change anything about it. You're just selling it into a different market. For instance, I've written a lot of sort of business finance dork topics like how to use ratio analysis to track trends in your business. And, you know, I resold that idea to like Rogers Publishing in Canada, and they wanted it on their Facebook fan page for small businesses. And it's just a different audience, and I really just almost sit down and rewrite it off of the exact same stuff, but just create a unique new story out of it. Maybe I organize the material in a different order. You know, I just present it in a slightly different way. And there's almost nothing really slanted different about it. It's, you know, basic how-to information. It's just a fresh article that I wrote on that topic. So, but, you know, other times it's a question of, hang on, Mark, if you have a story idea that you want us to review, put it in chat. I love it. I love Linda's suggestion that Janita think about playing favorites with your pets and sell it to pet magazines. That's a great way to re-slant it.
You could probably do it with all kinds of things. I mean, what about, you know, if you're a boss at work, playing favorite with your employees?
Yeah, playing favorites with your friends for some women's magazine.
Oh, good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you really just need to, like, go lay in the hammock and look up at the sun and like, free associate about ways, you know, you can re-spin your article. And I think this was the question Peggy was asking on the Den. Let me look quickly at the ones we got on registration. I wanted to get to Vanetta's question about the best way to query several different article ideas to a new publication or editor, because I'm really into that. I call it multi-pitch, and I like to include 2 to 3 short story pitches in a single query letter, and I've had really good results with that. I feel like it ups your odds because you're presenting more ideas, but better than that, it communicates to the editor that you're not just another one of these freelance writers who's got one idea they want to try and shove down your throat. You have lots of ideas. You're an idea person, and those are the kind of people that editors want to know. So I'm highly in favor. You know, you have to be really concise and yet still, you know, powerfully present each idea, so it's a pretty challenging format. But I just think that while you've got their attention, you know, there's not a penalty to presenting a couple of ideas instead of, you know, one. And often I find if I do pitch 2 or 3 that, you know, I lead with the one I'm just crazy about and I think is so perfect for them. And, you know, the last one is always sort of one I've thrown in as sort of, you know, my ringer backup. You know, I'm thinking, well, maybe they'd like this. And that's always the one they take, is that second or third one. So I just feel like, it's, you know, it's really hard to know. That's the biggest challenge as a new writer trying a new market, is that you don't know what they need. You just aren't close enough to the publication yet. You know, once you know that editor, you know, after you turn in that first story, you'll say, what else are you looking for? And they'll tell you, and, you know, your pitches have a much better chance of success. So to me, when you send a few, you're just really improving your odds. So I think we talked about the question several people had about sort of how to spin current events. Someone had asked, how can you be the one to know, be the first to know when news breaks? And you really don't have to be. There are ways to do that I could go into, but it's really not important because, as Linda said, there's really not news story ideas in the world. I mean, there's news events that happen and then stories that spin out of them, but you don't really, unless you're writing for like a daily news blog that is posting hourly or something and that's all about having the scoop, you know, maybe you're writing for TMZ or something where it's all about being the first to break a story. But most of the markets you're going to write for aren't like that. So it's not a concern.
Yeah, you're not, if you see news, you're not pitching the news. If you get a press release, you're not just pitching that press release as is. You're synthesizing things into ideas, which makes editors' jobs easier because, to tell you the truth, editors are all seeing this news before you are or at the same time you are. So if you just pitch a press release that she got, no go.
Yeah, I mean, you need to think about what it means. What will it cause to happen? What will happen next as a result of it? You know, or think of different audiences it will affect in different ways. How will it affect the readership of this particular magazine? You know, those mm-hmm. are the kind of stuff. So questions are coming in. Your idea is good, but the stories you found to support it don't fit the markets. Like, yeah, your source is too old for the publications. You got to fix it. You either got to find a publication that's a fit for that source, or you've got to find a different source who's a fit for the publication you have in mind. I mean, it's all got to work together. And, you know, sometimes that takes a little thinking. Actually, Daisha had a question on registration that said, often I feel like I have a good idea for an article, but then I get stuck on where to pitch it. I feel like if that's happening to you, you're not spending enough time studying target markets and learning about new markets that are coming out. I'm always scanning Wooden Horse that talks about editor changes, so you know new editors, and it gives you ideas about publications that are growing. And I also like to read Debbie Ridpath-Ohi's column on the writer's market online. Lots of news about changes, and that I just find that stimulates a lot of ideas. But if you have a few publications that you've really got a Jones for, you're dying to be in them, you need to be reading them all the time, you know, really subscribe. I mean, it's a write-off as a freelance writer, you know, or go down to your library and read them and, you know, really, really get to know them in depth. I just, you know, now that I am an editor for my blog and I get guest posts, I can tell you that 90% of them that are successful come from people who are regular readers of my blog. Just, you really need to soak up, you know, what that publication is to improve your odds of, you know, having something that fits. God, questions are just pouring in. I feel like we better get to the... You seem like you were answering some of these on chat, Linda. I don't know how far
back. A couple. I'm not seeing them all, though. I'm only getting a few of them.
Oh.
Yeah, Lynn, you won't be able to see the questions from other people. Only we can see them. But we'll read them out loud
right.
And answer them.
Yeah, we read them out. So Mark had an idea regarding our kids. For good reasons, we barely let them out of our sight. Does this stunt their ability to think for themselves? Are we making kids too safe? I think that's a topic that's, you know, been done. There's that whole Last Child in the Woods book. And
now we've got the woman who let her kids wander around New York City by themselves, so even the opposite has kind of been done.
Yeah, I have
there's
to say I don't do that.
Slant on it.
But I live in the woods, and my kids go out and play in the woods and stuff. And yeah, I don't do that. I let my kid bike down the street to the other kid's house, and I'm not living in that way. But yeah, maybe you could flip that over and do people who aren't doing that, who are like, no, I refuse to be paranoid. You know.
Yeah, it could be a good roundup of people who are really doing it in interesting ways. You know, giving their kids freedom and.
Yeah, because there's that whole free-range kids movement. That
that's what
idea
I was talking
that,
about. The woman
that,
in New York. Yeah.
Yeah, that classes and structured activities for kids suck and that, you know, they should just be outside poking rocks and dreaming and looking at the clouds. So, yeah, probably a number of ways to flip that. More questions keep coming and then it moves my thing.
Too bad you can't make this panel, this chat box, bigger.
I know. Yeah, there must be a way. Huh. Hang on. Ha-ha! I've made mine bigger. I'm excited.
Hey!
Okay. Now I can actually see what's happening. What about pitching ideas for a dog travel website? Is there a dog travel website? You have a first... You're not a dog owner yourself. That's probably going to make it challenging for you to come up with ideas.
But you have this. So there already is a website.
You have some kind of personal connection to, you know, what or interest in what you're writing.
Well, you know what I would do, though, about coming up with ideas is, I don't know if this question is about coming up with ideas or pitching ideas. I'm going to assume it's coming up with ideas. I would go to all the forums for dog owners and just ask, read, see what they're asking. That's how I ended up with an article in Health Magazine. I went to a women's health forum and saw that every woman had questions about her period. And you think you would know all this stuff by now. And I pitched it to Health, and it sold. So if you go on the forum, see what people are talking about, see what people are arguing about, there are probably a lot of pet and dog forums and email groups you can go on.
Hang on, I'm sending instructions on how to make the chat bar better. You want to all click on this little three people icon. Makes it smaller. I know, exciting, isn't it?
Got it.
So I want to write an article about rabbits, says Megan, why they make good pets, how to care for them. They get hardly any press.
See, that's the kind
Does that sound like a good idea related? That some magazine somewhere would want? Well, potentially, especially around Easter time. I would think serious tie-in because a lot of people, you know, give little bunnies as pets, but it's really a responsibility, and then they all let them loose in the park. My park has hundreds of them. We have, like, wild roaming, you know, herds of rabbits, and that's really common. So, you know, I'm sure there's a family magazine that would work for around Easter time about,
yeah.
You know, how to what it really takes and how to really take good care of them, you know.
It could work, and this is something I would also do as a roundup to kind of make it broader because it is really, really narrow, and the percentage of people who would ever be interested in having a rabbit is probably pretty small, which is probably why they don't get much press. Sometimes if you see something doesn't get a lot of press, there's a reason for it. If you did maybe unusual pets or small pets, non-traditional pets, and did a roundup of different kinds of pets that people don't usually think of but that make really good pets, that might work too.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just sort of boggled by all the questions here. Elizabeth is saying, 5 college friends who now have children trade in their normal eat-drink reunion for a 10-mile race reunion. That sounds like the premise for a novel. I'm not sure who the article is for. It sounds like a great chick lit novel to me. When Linda was talking about going in the chat rooms to look about pets, that's another thing where you can go on, you know, PR websites and do search terms to, you know, learn more, also find out about new things that are happening. 3 women representing 3 phases of women's lives do a backyard boot camp together. I'm not sure these are article ideas. They sound like novel ideas. I'm not...
Well, and the thing about the people of the different ages is that now you have 3 different demographics, but most magazines are pretty narrow about what demographics they serve. Like, you know, family circles for women probably late 20s and 30s. You know what I mean? So it's got women in it. It's got that part of the demographic, but then the ages don't fit anywhere.
Yeah.
It's a nice idea,
but,
though.
I think what's missing, Elizabeth, what's missing from these concepts you're coming up with is the why. Why do I want to read about that? What will I learn? What do I know? What do I find out? There's usually sort of a why behind almost every article you read. Let's see. Gabby has one. A famous French macaroon store just opened in New York, and I was thinking of that as a time pick for a roundup of where to eat when visiting Museum Mile on the Upper East Side. You know, there's a lot of publications that do those sort of little neighborhood spotlights, so that sounds like a pitch to do like that. I know Seattle Magazine does one of those, like every issue, where they'll do, you know, a tour through. And the Seattle Times does these too. You know, a one-day trip to this place. You know, you could go to this restaurant and shop at this store. That seems like a doable concept to me. Yeah, go ahead, Linda. You have a question from Mark.
Okay, yeah, it went to me privately. The question was, one problem I have run into is unresponsive editors. I have sent queries or even just email to reach out to an editor. Do I keep after him or her? Do I follow up with a phone call? Do I give up assuming that she or he does not have time for me? And he says kidding, but I don't think he is kidding. And this is a little bit off topic, but it kind of is on topic because you have all these great ideas and now you're not getting responses back. And Carol and I actually have kind of opposite ways of handling this. I follow up. I usually follow up after 2 weeks with an email, and then I might follow up with a phone call a few weeks later. And a writer I interviewed for the Renegade Writers Query Letters at Rockbook said that 90% of her acceptances come off of follow-ups because editors, they're busy, they lose ideas, your idea was caught in spam, you know, whatever. But Carol does something different.
Yeah, I never follow up on anything. I send... My philosophy is that the energy required to create a follow-up system and make all these follow-up calls, I send my query. I assume that if they are interested, they will contact me. I have faith that it has not gone in their spam box and nothing's wrong, and that if they are interested, I will hear from them. And I move on, and I use more time to write more queries and write more stories and come up with more ideas. And but the big caveat to that is, unless that editor contacts me to say, you are a vile human being and do not ever send me any query letters ever again in your life, I will continue to send them pitches in the future. The lack of response, what people need to realize, signifies nothing. It signifies absolutely nothing about you as a person or a writer. If you had any concept of how overwhelmed editors are, I mean, I asked one of my editors at Entrepreneur at one point, and she was getting 100 pitches a day, 500 pitches a week. And that gives you a sense both of how good your pitch has to be to make it onto their radar, and you know, how easily editors can just be overwhelmed. You know, they could be on vacation. They could be sick. That editor might be gone now. There are like 100 reasons I could name why they are not getting back to you. And to me, what's emotionally important is that you move on with your life and not, you know, the new writer and young writer problem is you write one query letter and you get all emotionally wrapped up in the fate of that querier because you love that idea and you think it's so amazing and it's so right for that publication. And what you need to do is send 5 query letters every week. And then you don't get this, you know, emotional relationship going on with your query where you're all sick and nervous about whether it's going to get accepted. If you send 30 or 40 queries every month, your odds of getting accepted are a whole lot better. Do I pitch them within a certain period of time? I don't know. I pitch them again when I have another idea for them. I'm not really concerned. It could be a week later. It could be 6 months later. I don't care.
But there is something to keep in mind there, which is that, you know, if you're pitching them a couple of times and they're not responding, they might just be one of those editors who just does not respond. And if there is a way to find another editor who covers that same beat, I would try somebody more responsive because it sucks to pitch into a black hole.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. Some of them, yeah, bullets bounce right off, and they don't really. And sometimes it's because they don't really take a lot of freelance stuff. You're just sort of pitching the wrong person. There was a question I wanted to get to that was like, how long do you wait before you send it to someone else? We don't wait at all. Send it on out. Keep sending.
Simultaneous queries, baby. It's the way to go.
Yeah, way to earn a living. Keep sending them out. Yeah, I don't wait for anybody. If it's an editor I already know, mm-hmm. I might say, you know, I'm going to give you a couple weeks to look at this before I move on. You know, I might really give them a courtesy. But the speed at which news moves today just does not really allow you to send one query and then wait 6 to 8 weeks and then send it another time. You're not going to be earning a living here.
And so many editors don't get back to you either. It's like, send it on, you're in trouble.
Yeah, many are just never going to respond, so you can't base your life around waiting for their response. That's just not emotionally healthy for you as a writer, because they're not going to respond, and then you're going to be all devastated. You should run on the assumption that you're never going to hear from them and that you just need to keep pitching and, you know, keep getting feedback from other writers and mentors about your pitches and making them better. And eventually you'll start to get responses like, this isn't quite a fit for us, but try us again. And that's when you know you're starting to get in the ballpark, when they take the time to do that. I had Parade do that to me with some query I loved so much, and of course they didn't take it, and I was totally sad. But they gave me that reach out, you know, and I felt like the door was still open. Then you definitely want to pitch them more, more, more. Yeah, Sarah, yeah, lots of people like to follow up, but I don't, so I don't do it. And I'm able to earn a living without ever doing that. Isn't that amazing? We absolutely do simultaneous submissions. What I like to do is to find situations where you're in the clear to simultaneously submit, like that story idea I had about million-dollar homeowners selling their homes for sale by owner instead of doing a realtor. I could send that idea on the same day to every major newspaper in America because they don't compete with each other. So thinking of non-competing markets is really, really key to me. That's like you could send 40 queries in one day on a topic and maybe get 6 assignments, you know, to do the same type of story where you could use the same lump of research, get a couple of sources locally for each market, and and you have a whole bunch of work. I've also done things where, like, I sold it to a trade publication and that's national and a local regional lifestyle magazine at the same time. There's just almost no overlap between their audiences. So, you know, it's just not a conflict. But also, you know, I know Linda has queried, you know, major Seven Sisters magazines at the same time.
Yes, and I have. Oh, yeah.
Okay, too.
At one time, two of them wanted it at once, and I said I already sold it to the first magazine, and the second one said, oh, I'll have to get back to you faster next time.
So, Amy, do you want us to discuss this query idea that you sent me privately? Let me know. I don't know. Linda, you don't tell editors you're submitting it elsewhere. I think that's just an assumption. You know, they should be assuming that at this point, that they may not be the only person seeing it. So Vani says, my friend does bulldog rescue with other women and wants me to write about how caring for these dogs help women with depression or unhappiness. I wonder what market that is for.
Yeah, is there something, is it specifically bulldogs? I mean, do they have some specific thing about them that helps depression, or is it any dog, or is it really any pet?
Yeah, I know people who do Vizsla rescue and stuff. I mean, maybe it could be broadened to dog rescue. Maybe the ASPCA magazine, you know, for their members, that might be an uplifting story for an organization like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Humane Society. And those are good markets,
yeah, that could
by
be
the way.
She says she wants to do just bulldog. You'd have to make sure that there is something particularly about bulldogs that makes them specifically suited to help people with depression. I'm not sure that's the case, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think this pitch brings up a really interesting point, which is that when people know you're a writer, then they want you to write about stuff they want you to write about, but you're in business to make a living, and sometimes there will be an intersection between what they want you to write about and a great story idea that you could sell to a great paying magazine, but sometimes there won't be. And you need to not sort of get pulled off the rails by their agendas and kind of stay on your own and go, you know, is this a killer idea and for a great market? And if so, I'm going to write it up. And I mean, there's no crime in writing about things you heard about from your friends at all, but it needs to make sense for your career, you know. So Rohi brings up something, and this was popping up before I wanted to talk about, do online publications and websites respond faster than print magazines? I like to avoid all generalizations of what print does versus what online does, because I just don't think of it as there's this like divide like that. I've had really good paying online markets, really low paying print markets, you know, online editors that respond in 1 hour and you know, and that never respond. And I just don't think you can make generalizations like that. And like someone had asked a question about, you know, I want to move to print. And my response to that is always, why? Because there's plenty of good paying markets online too. I'm sort of platform agnostic, and I just go where the interesting assignments and the money are. My thing. So question from Mark back to the unresponsive editor is, say, they didn't respond, but now I'm talking to another editor at the same publication. Might I send an idea to Joe that Charles never responded to? I have definitely done that, but saying that I did that, that I had sent it to Charles before, but maybe it wasn't right for his department. What do you think of it? You know, you don't want to go behind somebody's back and re-pitch an idea, but if you tell them you have pitched it to one other editor, you don't want to be getting into the middle of some crazy turf battle at some magazine. But as long as you tell them, I think. What do you think, Linda?
I was actually going to say that same thing. I would say, I sent this to Charles and I never heard back, and so I thought I'd try you. I don't know if he never got it or if he's on vacation or if he didn't like it. You know, I don't think there's a problem with that at all, as long as you're upfront about it.
So Sharon has pitched a good thing that I think is good for us to work on as an exercise. She says, there's lots about urban farming and backyard chickens. I can tell you this is huge in Seattle. I could do an article about using backyard livestock to tend your garden. Who for, Sharon? Who's the audience? And what's it? I mean, this has been done. This is a trend that's been reported on. So what's your new slant? What's your new angle? You know, how to do it with your kids, how to do it on a budget. Who are you thinking of it for? This is the difference between, you know, story ideas that don't go anywhere and story ideas that get assigned. Sort of, this is right where the rubber meets the road. Is when you have the first idea that pops into your head, usually it needs sort of buffing. It needs further evolving until it's ready and you've figured out what market it's for, and then you study that market and, you know, you name it. Terry says, how many no responses do you get before officially retiring a pitch? I don't know. If I like it, I keep sending it out. I'm not counting how many rejections I get. As you know, I'm not following up. I send, I move on. So, no. After 10 no's, do I stop? Certainly not. Certainly not.
I stop when I run out of markets. I mean, I might just be like, okay, you know, I can't think of anywhere else to send this. It's dead.
Right.
Now I'll come back later.
Right. That would be the natural stopping point, is I have run out of ideas of where to send this query. Then it's maybe it's hit the end of the road. But if I think it's great, and I can still think of new places to send it, I'm just keep it sending it around. You know, think of all the authors who got 100 million rejections before they got that one publisher that published their book. But the other thing is, you're thinking of it in terms of getting no's. And I never think of it. I wrote a post about this, about how to query without experiencing rejection. I think of it more like I'm playing match game. I'm putting my idea out in the universe, and what I'm looking for is a publication that's a fit for me. They like me. They like my writing. They like my idea. They pay what I want. Their editors are nice to deal with. You know, their timelines are good. And if this publication passes, it means they were not a fit for my match game. And if I had gotten the assignment from them, I probably would have been deeply unhappy, and it would have been horrible, and their editor is a psychopath. And, you know, so I'm really glad it didn't work out. And just, that's how I think of it in my mind, is it wasn't the right place for me. So I keep looking till I find the right place for me, where they go, your writing's funny, we want you to write for you all the time. Rohi, how do you keep track of your query letters? As I said, I don't. I do not track them. Linda has a system. What's your system?
Yeah, my system is it's a very loose system. I put them all in. You know, I always email them, and I save them all to a folder in Gmail called follow-up, and then every few weeks, or whenever I have the time, or whenever I want to procrastinate, I just go through, and I look at the ones that I haven't heard back from yet, and I follow up on those. And it's a very, you know, it's not a very organized system, but it works.
Okay, so Sharon's
you can
back
come up with
more.
With
go ahead.
I was going to say, you can make a form, an Excel file or something, where you can, you know, you have a little fields and boxes and stuff that works for some people too.
So Sharon is back with more detail on the urban garden thing. She says, I'm thinking for busy professionals who want to keep their garden controlled organically. So now it's maybe for working mother or something. Gabby says, for an urban farming angle, would a service piece like how to grow outdoor vegetables year-round in a New York-sized apartment be specific enough? Maybe if we said a small apartment, I think we're almost getting too tiny there, unless it's for New York Magazine, in which case it's just perfect. What do I need to put on a poster, Sarah? I don't even know which part. Let me know. Maybe I will. Maybe I'll put it in the den somewhere. Anyway, I think we've gotten to a ton of stuff, and it's been an hour. I don't even usually go that long on these calls, so I'm going to start wrapping it up. But let's talk about stuff that's coming up. We are just getting ready to do another session of the Blastoff class. For those few people who don't know, it is a 6-week-long group coaching course that takes you from who you are at, through every stage to, you know, identifying your relevant markets and ideas for those markets, buffing up queries, and running your business. And I think that's going to officially go on sale next week.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are already Den members, you will be seeing an offer from me, a discount offer on that. And other than that, Linda, other things you have coming up you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I have a new session of my e-course coming up on October 3rd. It's called Write for Magazines. It's an 8-week e-course that has full email support if you opt for that, on how to generate a saleable idea, find markets for it, find the right people to pitch, and write and send a killer query letter. I actually, just in the last week, one of my students from my last class, I saw her very first article on the newsstand at Barnes & Noble this week in Flight Journal magazine, and I just got an email from a second student yesterday saying that she just had her first article ever accepted from a live magazine based on the query she wrote in my course. So, you know, I get a lot of great success stories out of this course. It starts October 3rd, and you can go to therenegadewriter.com and click on courses to check it out. Thank you.
So Daniel had asked an interesting question about what is your query success rate? I haven't any idea.
I don't know either.
All I know is I get some wins, and the key thing is, of course, you know, when you make a connection, then you build that into a steady source of assignments. I think most pros I know don't write a lot of one-off assignments for for one publication, and then you have to query all over again for another. You know, you're building relationships, and then you don't have to do cold querying that much. Anyway, aside from all this, there's Freelance Writers Den. And if you're many of the people on the call or are already Den members, if you enjoyed this call and would like to get this quality of information from a rotating lineup of guest experts every single week on Wednesdays, you should consider joining Freelance Writers Den. You can do that at freelancewritersden.com. I'm Carol Tice, and this has been the Story Idea Lab with Linda Formicelli, and we'll be on the forums. If you have any follow-up questions out of this class, feel free to leave them if you're Den members in the forum thread for this class. Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thanks everybody.
Linda.
Bye.